All right, is this thing on?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's good? Okay, you can hear me. Good. Well, good morning. I always get like the first or the last presentation of the day, so I have to wake you up or put you to sleep, one of the two. Today is wake you up. So like Claudio mentioned, I run all things blockchain at VMware and across Dell Technologies. VMware is part of the Dell Technologies family. So I've had this job for the last 2.5 years. Blockchain actually started 4 years ago. As a research project at VMware, over 4 years ago. But I'm not here really to talk to you about VMware's technology. I'll do that at the very end. The marketing people make me do a marketing pitch at the very end of all my presentations. I'm really here to talk about pilots to production. So for the last 2.5 years, I go around, I talk with a lot of customers, I try and get a lot of customers to use blockchain, consume it in some interesting way. And what I've found is that there's a lot of people out there that get stalled after they do a POC or a pilot. They have trouble really getting it into production. And so that's what I want to talk to you about today, is what we've seen from customers, why they're getting stalled, what are the pitfalls, what can we do as an industry to help them move forward, either from a standards perspective or collaboration perspective. But this is more of an education thing on what we've seen customers do from an adoption standpoint. So I want to start and level set. Oh, here's our good disclaimer slide. With blockchain, we really see this as a new form of trust. I actually had one of the speakers that's going to be talking about GDPR come up and ask me this before our talk. He said, why not just use a database? Actually, I tell about 80% of the customers that I see, go use a database, right? It's really about trust. The database is a central trust authority. Someone's monitoring it, someone's backing it up, but you really have to trust that person that's maintaining that database. Blockchain or distributed ledger is really decentralized trust. If you don't want to trust that central authority, you want to have distributed trust or decentralized trust between multiple different parties. That's the power of blockchain. It's adding a new form of trust to the digital infrastructure. So that's the foundation for what we are. And you know, people really have to, our customers really have to grapple with this and deal with this and figure out, it's decentralized trust. It's about more than just me and my company. It's about bringing together multiple different companies. So it's a much different adoption cycle than just, here's a piece of technology, bring it into your individual company. I have to be the person that trusts it, right? It is about this distributor decentralized trust. Now, what's the power of this, right? What can it do for you? It can drive efficiency. We've seen this in case after case, where we have, you know, the typical like a supply chain, if you want to use a very complicated use case, where you have multiple different parties, you know, downstream, there's some sort of electronic data interchange that goes back and forth. Who in here has ever used EDI or set it up before? Right? You're probably like, ooh, EDI, you know, I'm gonna get, the heebie-jeebies of this, it always breaks. So blockchain is about driving that efficiency, where everybody is on that same plane of data. When we put something into this distributed ledger, that's obviously replicated to all these different parties. So everybody has the same copy of that same data at the same time. It gets rid of that nastiness of kind of the EDI exchange that's out there. So it can drive extreme efficiencies into existing systems that way. It can also speed up the flow of data, right? We don't have to worry about, you know, is this person maintaining the right inventory? Are they distributing the inventory system records, you know, downstream? Are we getting the right information from, you know, blood products that are flowing through the system? There's all sorts of applications where just speeding that information flow speeds that transfer of goods, frees up money, frees up resources, and helps everybody. So speeding up the flow of data. The other promise of blockchain, provide transparency for auditors. You'll see this in one of my slides later when we talk about some of the use cases, is that auditors can now participate in stream in the applications. Institutions have found a lot of use for this. At first, they're a little bit worried, right? Anytime you bring an auditor in here, but you need somebody to verify that trust. I'm gonna put down the giant lightsaber laser pointer that they gave me. We have auditors participating in stream in data. You don't have to shut down at the end of the quarter, do that audit on that particular thing. These auditors can participate in stream. And I'll talk about that when we get to some of the use case slides in a minute. So what are the other promises of blockchain? It can make me a billionaire, right? We're not going to talk about cryptocurrency, though, at any point in time here for the rest of the show. It can also solve world hunger. I've heard that on more than one occasion. Blockchain, we just put it in and it solves this problem for me, right? Blockchain is not going to do that for you. It just simply isn't. So here's the typical adoption path that we see over and over again. Now I will use my laser pointer. I'm a little bit afraid that this thing's going to burn the building down. So the first thing up is we identify some consortium leader, because again, this is decentralized or distributed trust. So it's more than one company that's generally participating in this. If you look at like the food trust network that we set up, there's usually some central authority. In the case of this food trust network, it's the food source tracker, right? The leading food source tracker that's out there that says, hey everybody, we're gonna get on a blockchain so that we can show the source of food throughout the system and improve the system. So usually there's some consortium leader. They come up with some business case and some requirements, and then they go and try and get a bunch of the other companies. So in the case of like the food trust network, we try and get the farmers, we try and get the retailers, we try and get the wholesalers, the producers, the packagers, all involved in this consortium. So this takes a good bit of time when you're actually trying to implement blockchain in a real world scenario, because you have to bring this consortium together and get them to buy off before you do anything from a technology standpoint. There's this heavy lift that's up front, and 3 to 9 months is probably on the light side for this. Then you actually go through and you select the blockchain platform. You know, and if you can't get the consortium to buy in, there's an exit point, right? Blockchain fails. So this is one of the failure points of blockchain. We just simply can't get everybody to buy into this and come together from a business standpoint. It has nothing to do with the technology. Then you go through and you select the blockchain platform. There's plenty of them out there. I'm gonna talk about them in just a minute here. Right, and then you design and develop your application. And this is another point where there's a failure, because people don't understand, you know, smart contracts. They don't have the tools, they don't have the knowledge to develop smart contracts, which are neither smart nor contracts really. It's a piece of code, and if you've ever developed smart contracts, they're kind of a pain in their infancy right now. So there's another exit point, right? The application development just fails. And then you finally get into some POC or pilot. Right, and then this POC or pilot sometimes fails. You're like, I'm not really getting the transaction throughput that I need in here. I'm not seeing the efficiencies that I thought I was gonna get with blockchain. And so you go back, you repeat, you select another blockchain platform. Maybe this one will be faster, this one will be better, right? It'll provide the tools that I need to actually manage this at scale. And so you come back through here, through your pilot and your POC, and you're like, finally, we got something that really works. Now I'm gonna go put it into production. Problem is, there's all sorts of pitfalls when that happens. What do you need to do for an audit? How do you audit a blockchain? Do you go and like you're JPMC over here, and you're gonna go to Goldman and say, hey, my auditors are in town, I'm gonna go over to Goldman. Hey, Goldman, I'm gonna bring my auditors in to look at the blockchain nodes that you have, right? That's never gonna happen. So how do you audit this across consortiums? How do you provide and do like a GDPR audit, which you'll hear about in just a second? How do you do some of these regulated audits? There are no tools to do that. There are no tools really to manage this stuff at scale. And that's where a lot of people are falling down. They come to their risk management department and they fail. So there's another exit point for blockchain. And then a few brave souls actually do make it into quote unquote production, right? We haven't seen really production at scale largely, but they get into production. They have some limited amount of customer data that's real, that's doing real transactions and moving it through the blockchain system. So this is your typical blockchain path, right? There's a lot of failures, a lot of pitfalls inside of here. And that's what I want to talk to you about, is how to get this from this pilot phase to production. So these use cases. So what do we use this thing for? That's probably the biggest thing to figure out how we get this from pilot to production. Use it for the right use cases. I've talked to a bunch of customers, collected like 320 discrete use cases for blockchain from these customers. Problem is, when I go to build a product from the product side of what I do, I can't build a product of 320 use cases. So I found four things that blockchain is actually useful for. So these are the four things to avoid this pilot to production failure. The first one up is this guaranteed and verified data dissemination. At the end of the day, blockchain is a large peer-to-peer network. We guarantee delivery to every node, right? And we know that no one's mucking with the data on any of those nodes without everybody agreeing to it. So it's really good when you need to do data flow, and especially because you can put the auditor or the regulator in line here. Like I was with a large airline, and they said, hey, we need to have FAA records, but the FAA comes in and reports this stuff before our planes go back out, and it's delaying us. So if we can put the auditor inside of here and disseminate that information out, that everybody has the same maintenance manual, it's gone through the same process, then that can actually speed up getting the airlines back online. We see this as well as in disease reporting. You know, there's a mandatory disease reporting requirement for communicable diseases. In healthcare, which you'll hear about a little bit later, I'm actually pretty interested in that presentation because there's a lot of regulations in healthcare that prevent adoption of blockchain. We can't even move a patient record across state lines, let alone replicate it to all these different blockchain nodes. But with mandatory disease reporting, where I actually have to report this to all the different counties in a certain timeline, this is a great use case for blockchain. Put it out there, everybody has the same piece of information at the same time, we know that everybody has the exact same thing and no one's mucking with it. The second use case is asset and product tracking. You've probably heard about this a lot, you know, part history, data provenance, blockchain is this append-only immutable log, so we get great data provenance all the way through here. We can see the exact history of what's been happening with this transaction through blockchain. That's where people are supposed to laugh, because if anybody's tried to go back and look up a history inside of a blockchain of a transaction, it's quite difficult, quite a bit of pain. So that's another one. But lot and food tracking, there's a lot of food industry stuff going on right now with asset and product tracking, really from the source all the way down to the retailer. So really interesting stuff happening there. Asset transfer is the third use case. So once you have an asset, being able to transfer it without this double spend, right? Blockchain prevents this double spend problem where I give you $100, but then I'm also going to give him the same $100, right? And who did I give the $100 to? So once something's committed in blockchain, there's no equivocation from it. It goes out there, it reaches consensus, and it's written. So really nice. We do a lot in deed transfer and recording. The energy sector has really picked up on this, especially renewable energies. Has said, hey, we're going to build microgrids with solar panels. I saw huge solar grids out here, so I'm sure NIST is involved with setting up a microgrid. And now we can go ahead and sell this energy off from our microgrid with these energy swaps. So you see kind of small makeshift electric facilities popping up all over in the United States right now. And then certified claims is the last one. You are who you say you are, or you have what you say you have. Real popular in KYC and banking, know your customer. They're probably, I don't know, there's a lot of bankers around here. But KYC is the forms you fill out that says, here I am, I'm this person, and then you go to another bank and you open up another loan. Here I am, same papers again. So that's what KYC process is. So if we can tokenize that, right, and say I filled out the papers once, it's tokenized and represented, it's stamped, it's on the blockchain, no one can muck with it. Then when I go and open up another account, I can represent myself with that digital token. People can say, here's the information, no one's mucked with it, it's in this blockchain, now you have a copy of it. So actually this KYC process and tokenizing KYC in banking speeds up the process quite a bit. So you're gonna see that coming around. And then we have been doing stuff with digital voting. Not in November, but it'll happen sooner or later, especially proxy voting in the financial institutions. So certified claims is the fourth one. Excuse me. So we have data dissemination, asset tracking, asset transfer, and certified claims. These are kind of the four pillars of blockchain. Now you can use them for individual use cases as we've described, or you can use them together into something like supply chain where it's a more complicated system that involves everything, right? So we have asset transfer, we have product tracking, data distribution of manuals and stuff like this. So you really can combine all of these into larger ecosystems that happen out there. So now that we know the use cases, where do people get stuck, right? Where are these pitfalls where customers are falling over themselves again and again and again? Well, the first place is people are picking the wrong blockchain or the wrong consensus method, I think, a lot of times. There's a lot of different methods to reach consensus, and that's the foundation for this distributed trust, is how do we reach consensus on what's being written or what's being done in this distributed ledger. So if you go back to ancient history in blockchain, right, which is about 4 or 5 years ago, when I guess 7 years ago when the Satoshi Nakamoto consensus protocol came out, a lot of people are doing proof of work, right? So it's heavy on the mining, right, because this is CPU hashing. A lot of people are doing CPU hashing, trying to solve a cryptographic problem. They get rewarded with some token representation inside of that network. But it's, the mining's no good because people can actually mine two blocks at the same time or near the same time. And then what happens is the blockchain forks. And you see this over and over again. Fidelity actually did a presentation recently and said, we've done all these pilots and none of them have gone into production because we can't solve this forking problem. And the forking problem is, you have two writes, so both of them get written, and then the blockchain just forks, and you have to wait a period of time, usually for the longest fork to win. And that could be tens of minutes, that could be hours, that could even be days in some circumstances. This happens quite frequently in a proof of work system. And it's kind of a pain because it affects your time to finality. I've written this transaction in there, and now my transaction, I have to wait, you know, an hour or two for that transaction to be written, where I'm used to a database and it happens, you know, in milliseconds. So this is actually a big problem that goes along with the forking. It consumes a massive amount of CPU power, which is capital cost, so no good from a proof of work. We've modified that to kind of a proof of stake system where there's still mining involved, but there's economic incentives to behave better. So there's a little bit less forking that goes on. This should actually be kind of a sideways face. Still CPU power, a lot of capital cost goes into it, but it reduces the time to finality because it reduces some of this forking from the economic incentive that goes on. And then there's a technology that's actually been around since 1998 when MIT published its first paper on Byzantine fault tolerance. Who in here knows about the Byzantine generals problem? We probably have a bunch of computer science people. Right, perfect. Sometimes I go to people and they just look at me with this blank stare. So this is based on the Byzantine generals problem, right? It's how do we solve for knowing that there are traitors in our midst, but we don't know who the traitors are, right? So in a Byzantine system, it's different than proof of work and proof of stake. These two assume that everybody's there for the common good for the most part, right? We all want to work towards a common economic incentive. And then if there's malicious activity, we just try and deal with that as best we can. We try and put more nodes out there to say there's more good nodes than bad nodes, right? So we just keep increasing the node count. This isn't really good in an enterprise setting because they don't want to put thousands and thousands of computers out there. So a lot of enterprises have gone now towards this Byzantine fault tolerance system where we assume there are traitors in the midst. We don't know who they are, so we assume everybody is bad. It's a different security stance, right? And then we deal with those malicious activities, usually with some formula like a 3F plus 1 thing where we can tolerate one failure out of every four nodes from a malicious activity and still go on. But there's no mining in this, right? This is a voting-based system. We put a write out there, it reaches consensus, and it gets written to the environment. So fast vote, no mining, no forking, because there's no two votes happening at the same time. There's no two people trying to solve the same thing at the same time. We're simply voting on something. So real quick time to finality, you know, under a second. Real low CPU time, which is real low capital cost. So a lot of enterprises are now looking at how do we implement some sort of Byzantine fault tolerance system. And there's several different models out there, right, for BFT systems. I'll talk about one that we've created at the end here from a VMware perspective. So this is the first one. It's figuring out, you know, how do we solve some of those things? Because like I said, people go into that pilot and then they're like, man, I just can't get the throughput I need, or I can't get the node count that I need, or I can't get my time to finality is too high. So this is all around that performance. And these are the things we hear from customers, right? My current solution doesn't perform, can't get me from pilot to production. I'm okay with a hosted solution. Most of the people are consuming blockchain as a hosted platform that's out there today. But I don't, you know, I want some local replicas. I don't have the tools or the knowledge to get past my risk management department. This one pops up over and over and over again. I'm going to put it in production and then, you know, the risk people come in and they say, whoa, 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 what's this blockchain thing? You know, I know my Aunt Sue made $1 billion off of some, you know, cryptocurrency thing, but I have no idea why we're using this in our enterprise setting. So it takes a lot of education. Or I'm okay, you know, I don't want to be locked into a single cloud provider. This goes along with the hosted solution. Or I don't want to be locked into a single blockchain solution. We are in an emerging technology, right? We don't know who to bet on. And I don't want to break the bank on energy costs. I'm going to get into that at the end here. So better scaling and throughput. This is one of the things that, as an industry, we've been trying to move forward with. There's an academic consortium called IC3. Anybody here of IC3? A few people out there, right? So it's a consortium made up of several different academic institutions like Cornell, Cornell Tech, Technion, UC Berkeley, UCIC, several different academics, and then a few industry partners. And we try to work together to solve what they've identified as six grand challenges. And one of those grand challenges is on scaling and performance. Their mark is to get over 100,000 transactions per second. Right now, no one's near it, but that's their mark, right? To get over 100,000 transactions per second. Now, database people are saying, wow, that sucks. You know, that's pretty low. But again, you have to figure out, Do you trust that central authority? If you do, use a database and go for that high transaction throughput. If you want that distributed trust, you are going to pay a penalty. You are going to have lower transactions because we have to reach consensus, right, in a distributed fashion. It's simple economics at that point. So better scaling and throughput. Like I mentioned, VMware has created, this is where I will segue into this one little VMware piece, has created something called Project Concord. It's open source. It's out there on GitHub. You can find it or go to vmware.com/blockchain and you'll find Project Concord. The foundation for Project Concord is a scalable Byzantine fault tolerance system. So we talked about BFT just a minute ago. The problem with BFT, it's the voting system and it's a gossip protocol. So it's very, very chatty, right? The more nodes I add, the lower throughput I actually get because I have this quadratic expansion of messages because we have to talk to all the different nodes. Scalable Byzantine fault tolerant that you'll find in Concord actually simplify that. So we have a singular expansion of messages. We have a fast path, slow path. On top of that, we actually implemented the Ethereum virtual machine as our first kind of language support on top of it. And so it allowed us to do kind of this benchmark thing to say we have 200 nodes running in every availability zone that Amazon has around the world right now in kind of this test for this SBFT system that we have. We took the last 2 months of the Ethereum contracts from the public Ethereum workload, right? Ran it on top of the SBFT system, which has the Ethereum virtual machine on top of it. So 2 months of a contract took 2.5 hours to run on top of SBFT. So much higher throughput if you're looking at Ethereum-based systems, right? Much higher node count that's out there in an enterprise setting, and a lot lower latency. So again, one of the ways that you can say, hey, I need to take a look at what's being done in an industry as we move these consensus protocols forward, right? And we open source this to try and, you know, get it out there. There's a lot of different platforms that are looking at consuming this now as a consensus protocol. It's not the end-all be-all. Consensus protocols will continue to evolve. So just continue to watch that, and that's how we improve. This is just one example. So like I said, Project Concord, vmware.com/blockchain. You can go and find Project Concord. It's Apache 2 licensed, so very friendly from an open source standpoint. If you want to use it, contribute to it, do whatever you want to with it. So the other thing is, you know, a lot of solutions out there are SaaS-based solutions. You know, Microsoft has one, Oracle has one, IBM has one. You know, I'm missing a bunch. We have one. VMware has one. So there's a bunch of SaaS-based solutions that are out there. Problem is, a lot of people really want local replicas to be connected to that SaaS environment, right? Local replicas presents a problem because in a blockchain environment, typically all nodes communicate to all the other nodes, right, to form this large peer-to-peer mesh network in this decentralized state. Well, when you're in regulated environments, connecting into other regulated environments where everybody has to talk to each other, it gets rather complicated, right? So having the ability to do a hosted solution, which is smart in my opinion, but with local replicas is one of those challenges. There's a couple people that have solutions for this. We do at VMware. I believe Microsoft has a solution for this now. Allowing local replicas. And they do this for auditing perspectives. They do this from a regulatory perspective. They do it from a warm and fuzzy perspective. That actually comes up quite a bit, right? I just want my local node to hang on to, so I don't trust anybody else. But another place where people fall over, they've chosen the wrong blockchain platform because they realize they do really want local replicas. The other place they fall over is, you know, getting past that risk department. They put this in and then they say, all right, you know, IT, go and manage this. And they're like, well, how does this plug into our tools? How do we manage this at scale with our enterprise management tools? There's a lot of lack of enterprise management tools or scale out tools for blockchain today. Or, you know, how do I do an audit on this? How do I do a GDPR audit on this? Can I delete data from a blockchain? I mean, GDPR, part of it is the right to be forgotten. We're in an append-only immutable log. How do I deal with deletes inside of that environment? Our next speaker will talk a little bit about, you know, one of the ways to get around that. But doing regulated audits on a blockchain is extremely difficult. You know, some of the people out there, PwC has a tool to do PCI compliance audit checks in blockchain now. Deloitte, I know, is working on a lot of this from their audit firms. So there are people working on this, but it's one of the places that people fall over. They say, hey, we've got this great pilot running, and now we can't get it past the risk management department to get it into production. Multi-cloud is a foundational belief in us, right? We said, hey, this is about distributed trust. What better way to build that distributed trust or that decentralized trust than to deploy it across multiple different cloud providers? So if you are going to a hosted solution, say, hey, that's fine. I want to host this in IBM Cloud or Microsoft or, you know, AWS or something like that. What if I can just deploy it across all of those? So there's very few solutions that allow you to do that out there today. We've been building one that does allow you, because we have over 4,000 cloud partners. It's kind of, we have to make everybody happy. But you know, one of the things to really look at is you are going to be connecting eventually to other companies, and those other companies have other cloud providers that they trust. You might be in one part of the Food Trust Network running on Amazon. Another consortium member might say, hey, our standard is Azure. Another one might say our standard is, you know, Google Cloud, you know. So you have to run across multiple different clouds if you're going to really build out these distributed distributed trust networks. And then multi-blockchain, you know, I put the word management up here, but it's about more than management. You know, you've chosen a blockchain platform. Let's say you go with Hyperledger, right? And then someone else stands up another blockchain platform. Let's say it's an Ethereum-based system. Someone else stands up another blockchain solution. Let's say it's Quorum, you know, the JPMC blockchain that, you know, was invented. How do we get these things to write together? Right now, there's no good way to do this. Ourselves, VMware, we're working with two other partners that have built large food trust networks to try and glue these things together, to try and figure out how do we do a global consensus across multiple different blockchains that have been implemented. So there's work that's being done in the standards industry. There's actually a project at Hyperledger called Quilt that's trying to take this initiative on. But there's really no good way to do cross-blockchain with consensus from an industry perspective. Now, I talked about energy. So we're actually on the record for declaring energy-guzzling blockchains immoral. That was actually my boss that said that. And God love the Register. They pick up all these crazy things all the time. It is immoral. Just to give you an inkling of where this is, and actually this move, since I made this presentation, it's gone up, it's gotten worse. Bitcoin, the Bitcoin network, is actually the 41st largest energy consumer ranked by countries. So they're just ahead of, I believe, the Czech Republic and right behind Chile as far as energy consumption in the world. So a lot of energy consumption. Just to give you kind of a single transaction inside of the Bitcoin network consumes around 1,000 kilowatts of electricity because of all this hashing that's going on from all these CPUs around the world, right? This is actually from, you can't read it, but if you get my presentation, you'll see the source for this that's down there, which is really scary, right? That's like 498 kilograms of CO2 produced by a single transaction. I give you a Bitcoin, guess what? I just use 1,000 kilowatts of electricity. I give you a Bitcoin, I just use another 1,000 kilowatts of electricity. To put this into perspective, here's my house in Florida, right? I'm a family of six. We use around 43 kilowatts of electricity per day. Single transaction, 1,000 kilowatts. Family of six uses 43 kilowatts of electricity for that day. That's huge. That is immoral. That's not sustainable. We need a better system. We need a better platform to do this. We actually put it directly in our interface to say, hey, if you did this in our system, you know, with this consensus protocol, or if you did it with a different consensus protocol or another consensus protocol, so we kind of rank them there. But, you know, we really believe that the industry as a whole needs to work on a better consensus protocol and move in that direction. So these are common things we heard from customers. There are solutions for these out there. That's why I put the green check marks. There is work being done in the industry as a whole. I've worked in emerging technologies my entire life, from creating the first web servers, first global voice over IP networks, first search engines. You know, I've worked in this, built the first clouds that were out there. And this is the first time where I've seen people really working together, competitors really working together to try and drive the industry forward. You see a lot of work. You know, you have VMware a lot of times. I'll stand up here with people from Microsoft and Oracle, right? We're three big competitors. We really don't like each other most of the time. But you see us in the blockchain space giving each other technology, trying to work on these panels together to move the industry as a whole together. So the good news is blockchain is moving forward. It is being adopted. There are people actually going into production and getting past these hurdles. So I can't stand up here without VMware people telling me, hey, you got to go do the marketing pitch. So here's our vision, what we're working on from a VMware perspective, because I know it got asked earlier. So down here at the bottom, you see Project Concord. This is the core blockchain. You could put Hyperledger in here, Ethereum in here, Quorum in here. This is kind of that core blockchain. There's some blockchain that's going to be running in your solution, right? What we're doing, in particular with Concord, is tying it into other security aspects that are out here, right? You have these nodes that are running out here. It's about distributed trust. How do you trust those nodes? So we use stuff like RSA NetWitness to protect the nodes from malicious attacks. We use NSX, this NSXT technology that we have to do micro segmentation on the network, where these micro segmented firewalls follow these blockchain nodes around. And then we start to build blockchain utilities on top of this. What are the common utilities that you're going to need to build applications inside of your environment? How do you deal with key management? People are like, oh, key management, that's easy. You know, we do that today. But how do you deal with it across a consortium where you have multiple distrusted parties that are out there in this decentralized trust system? Who manages the keys for the nodes that get on there at that point in time? Is there some adult supervisor? Now you're going back to kind of a centralized authority. Is there some distributed way that we can do this? So there are ways to do it with key management. One of the interesting things that we've done a lot of work in lately is zero-knowledge proofs. Anybody in here a zero-knowledge proof kind of person or expert? Wow, this is actually an interesting crowd. Usually I have zero hands that raise with that one. So zero-knowledge proofs is, we find it as the next level of trust that can be run on top of blockchain. For those that didn't raise their hand, zero-knowledge proofs, you can go look it up. The easiest way to describe, I don't know if there's an easy way to describe this, but the easiest way for me, since I have a little six-year-old running at home, is I have Where's Waldo books. Anybody have Where's Waldo, knows where Waldo is? It's Where's Willie or something like that in the UK. But it's a funny guy with glasses and stripes. He has a whole bunch of characters on a page, and somewhere on that page is Waldo, right? Well, I want to give you a Where's Waldo book, but I want to tell you, yeah, there is a Where's Waldo. I want to prove to you that there's a Waldo on the page without actually showing you Waldo. And that's what a zero-knowledge proof is. I want to show that I have something without actually showing you that I have it, right? So imagine this, where I, as an individual, can now hold my data. You, as a company, want to know, do you live at, on Rickenbacker Trail? I can prove to you that I live in that vicinity, right? Enough information for you without actually showing you that I actually live there, proving you that I live there. So it's a mathematical proof that basically gets built. If you want to know more about zero-knowledge proofs, I actually have a better, more technical explanation for it. But it's really interesting in the blockchain space because now I can don't have to distribute data across the network, right? There's this whole thing with, okay, this data gets replicated to all these nodes, but I don't want all these nodes to actually have this data. How do we do that? I think that's probably come up in some of the GDPR talk. But secure messaging, identity management, the multi-blockchain work is a lot of stuff we're doing. Secure multi-party computation, where we have to have multiple parties kind of turn the key at the same time in order to see and execute something, is really interesting in the blockchain space. And then there's a lot of stuff we're building around it, right? We've got a lot of industry affiliations that are going on over here. We're founders of Hyperledger. We're members of IC3. Members of the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, so a lot of industry work that we're contributing to, and a lot of standards work. I think Eric is in here somewhere. Oh, there he is. Oh, there, the guy waving his hand. That's our guy in charge of all standards. So if you want to know the standards work we're doing, go find Eric later. And then why VMware? You know, why the heck are you getting into this? You're an infrastructure company, right? I mean, you build VMs, you build clouds, you build management stuff. At the end of the day, this is actually our bread and butter. I've been here at VMware for 16 years, right? For the last 20 years, we've been a distributed management and security company. When we introduced Virtual Center, it's distributed management security of VMs. We introduced AirWatch, distributed management security of mobile devices. So distributed management security, that's what blockchain is, right? This is our bread and butter, solving large-scale, enterprise-focused, distributed systems problems. That's what blockchain is. We have over 4,000 cloud partners, so again, this distributed distribution of blockchain nodes. And then last but not least, definitely beneficial to us, is that we have these three individuals here that started our blockchain work, over 4 years of advanced work. These are the world-renowned leaders in consensus protocols. These people have been doing it for a long, 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 long time.
don't want to age them or anything like that. Itai Abraham, Dalia Malky, and Guy Galangueta. If you're in the blockchain space, especially in the academic space, you'll know these researchers, right? You'll know their names and what they've contributed over the many, many, many years. So we're lucky enough to have them. So we continue to kind of push this blockchain technology through. Like I mentioned, we open source what we've been working on for the past 4 years, free to consume it, free to drive it forward. But now we're really focused on how do we take people from that pilot phase, from that POC phase into production. How do we solve those problems and how do we do it as an industry to move this forward? Because if everybody wins, then we win too. The pie gets bigger for everybody. So with that, I'll take any questions that you may have. I don't know where we are in time. I think I kind of caught us back up almost. Maybe even put us a little bit ahead of schedule.
We have time.
Yeah. So please, any questions, I'm happy to answer anything that you have on this topic or anything else blockchain related. I have an individual over here.
Hey, Mike, great presentation. You mentioned earlier, if I heard you correctly, that it's difficult to retrieve the history of transactions, if I understood you correctly. Can you explain why? Is it due to off-chain nature or simply encryption of data? If you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, it's more around the tools, right? So blockchain has those transactions, but most of the blockchains don't link the transactions together, right? So if I have a transaction that was in block one, another update to that transaction, right, was in block 100, another one was in block 200, the kind of modern way to do that is we kind of have to scour all the blocks looking for those transactions and link them together in some way, you know, kind of off-chain. And that takes a lot of CPU cycles. It's not very relational related. And this is kind of the major problem is, you know, people are very used to databases. And so they're used to a relational method of being able to see this, or some easy MapReduce way to do it, or some search-based way to do it and get to that data. And those tools don't exist yet in blockchain for the most part. There's, you know, some things like Etherscan. You can go out there and kind of, you know, scan the public network. But Etherscan behind the scenes is still doing the same thing. It's scouring all the blocks looking for those transactions. We've seen tools that do this off-chain, right? They say, okay, when we write these transactions in, we're kind of going to keep a sidebar record here of these things in a relational database so that we can actually see the transactional history here. Right, but then if that database breaks down, or you have to do something to that database, then that kills, you know, your search capability. So search and being able to pin these things together from a transactional history is not easy, right? It's not one of those things that you just go in and do it. That's why I said if you talk to somebody that's actually implementing blockchain applications, a lot of times they'll laugh at that. They'll say, "Oh yeah, going back in that was a pain, right? We spent 4 weeks trying to figure that one out." So it can be done. It's just, is it off-chain or on-chain? And then when you get into anything that's off-chain in a blockchain standpoint, is that really back to that decentralized trust, right? Are you using blockchain and just kind of blockchain washing out there? Why not just use that database if you're going to do everything off-chain?
Just a follow-up. Might the block construction, the way in which blocks are constructed, mm-hmm. formed, might that alleviate some of the concerns you just mentioned?
Yeah, so the ways blocks are formed might alleviate some of that. You know, most blockchain environments, and I'm generalizing here, right, typically collect several transactions into a block. That increases performance, right? You kind of get that bulk throughput. In SBFT, our initial implementation of that, we actually put one transaction in a block to improve kind of, you know, looking stuff up and then kind of a key value pair, our persistence engine. So there's typical blockchain architectures, there's some consensus protocol. There's some replicated state engine, right? That's the storage. In SBFT, it's a key value pair state engine, replicated state engine. So that key value pair allows easier lookups and easier writes into the system. If you're storing stuff in a smart contract, then typically it's an isolated engine, right? It's only inside that smart contract. And you write something to another smart contract or another version of the smart contract, then now you have to look up stuff in several different smart contracts and piece them together. So it's just how you implement it, how you implement your application is really going to, and a lot of people go down that route and then that's where they fall off, right? They're like, we implement it this way and then, oh, we want to do an audit on it and they need to look it up another way and it just dies. Yeah.
On your adoption cycle or throughput that you put up at the very first, I've had a lot of engagements with innovation and actually, you know, developed and taught a course on this, and One of the things that I've found in the things that I've read and experienced is a good way to increase your hit rate is to look at that pipeline from the end backwards in terms of what are the things that are going to support adoption and make your design decisions based on that. You kind of alluded to it a couple of times, so I wanted to understand how much of your experience has been sort of feed forward through that and how much of it has been looking back and then implementing.
Yeah, so when I started this, right, I would go and do, I would go from this way, right? I try and find those people and build the business cases. You know, it's the biz dev kind of part. I've wear many, many different hats. I'm an engineer by nature, but have a lot of business development sides of me, and then get that consumer buy-in. And then we'd find that, you know, we'd fail, right? It would just be like, I did 12 months of work and nothing, right, comes out of this. And I get frustrated. And then I go and I'd be like, okay, we do the blockchain selection. We won the blockchain, right? They're using SBFT and our engineers and our researchers would cheer. And then they go and say, we're gonna build our development, we're gonna do our DApp, you know? We don't have any in-house DApp expertise, so we're gonna go get a third-party company. And guess what? That third-party company comes in and says, well, we're not using SBFT, we're using Hyperledger because that's what we have familiarity with. So we'd lose, right? So this is kind of our internal sales cycle. But then that that company would go through and then they'd stall and they'd come back and they'd go again and they'd stall and they'd come back and go again, right? So our target right now is really this pilot to production gap. It's exactly what you say.
Yeah.
Let's start from this end and work our way backwards, right? Almost.
Yeah. So to use an overused term, particularly in blockchain, is develop the contract at the end that says, if you can prove the following things, we will adopt it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then you focus on those things rather than the wide end of the funnel trying to move it forward.
Yeah, and that's really kind of the purpose of this presentation is to say, you know, look out, you're going to hit these following things because we've seen it time after time after time after time again, right? So pay attention to them now when you're getting started so that you don't fall out at the end. Like this, the search thing, right? How are we going to deal with this at the end? How are we going to deal with our audit tools at the end? That impacts your design decision because you'll go all the way through and you'll have designed it and then you'll figure that out and you gotta go back, right, and do this loop. We've seen a company do this loop four times, right, and it's taken them 18 months to do that loop four times. Yeah. So this is problematic. Any other questions?
You know.
Well, I'll be around here for about half the day, so if you wanna grab me during the coffee break.
Actually, I have a question.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Yeah. So you use multiple technologies, platform. You are agnostic to Hyperledger theory, right? So have you ever tried to do some interoperability between those multi-systems?
Yeah, so the question was on the interoperability. So first of all, we're not agnostic, right? I would get my hand slapped for that, right? We Project Concord, right? We want you to use SBFT. Take that away, go use it right now. It's nothing I can sell you. It's open source, right? So I mean, we're not making any money on that, but that's what we're putting our technology effort into. With that said, we do contribute to Fabric, Hyperledger Fabric today, because we're founders of the Hyperledger project. We're the number one contributors to the Cello project. We contribute to Calibre. We contribute to Quilt, right? So we contribute to all these different projects in there. We're members of the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. We work hand in hand with a lot of the different Ethereum people. We've worked with Quorum and done some integrations with Quorum, and that's the one that we're working with right now is kind of Ethereum-ish, right? Quorum to Ethereum-ish SBFT. How do we integrate those two things? And then we have other commercial blockchain solutions that are looking at picking up SBFT. So, you know, when you're looking at multiple different consensus protocols and you're looking at multi-ledger support, the trick is really that global consensus. You know, okay, let's say we write something and it comes into a Hyperledger environment. And then we want to replicate that over to a VMware environment. And we want both of them to have that same state. Well, how do I know that it when it went over to the VMware environment, we didn't reach consensus, but you reached consensus in the Hyperledger environment, so now they're off kilter. Or we try and update something and it doesn't get updated in the other environment. So these are things that we have to deal with. There is work underway. There are standards work. You know, there's no standard in how to write this, how to represent stuff. And that's part of the problem. There's no standard language from a smart contract perspective. So that's one of the other problems that that's going on right now. So, yeah, it's a wait and see thing.
Lots of seeing?
There are solutions that are out there. There are a lot of companies that promise multi-ledger, but they do it off-chain, right? They say, we're going to write onto this, and then we bring it off-chain, and we have like a little cryptlet or something over here, and we write it onto this other chain. But again, you don't know if there's global consensus being reached. Right. So you've kind of broken blockchain, in my opinion.
Okay. Appreciate Mike. Let's give a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Great talk.
Next speaker will be...
I have a question. Sorry.
Yeah, sure.
I keep on raising my hand. I think I just get
more. Apologize. Yeah.
But anyway, I think you at the beginning of your presentation, you mentioned, blockchain can do this, blockchain can do that, and... can it solve the world hunger?
Yeah.
And, maybe not. So here's maybe just information to share with the audience here, just simply because I came to know about, related to the world hunger part of the blockchain application. So there's a company named the Twiga, T-W-I-G-A. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you heard about it. Mm-hmm. It's like a food logistic company. It's like Cisco in North America, right?
Yep.
So it's based in Kenya. So They partnered with Hyperledger researchers, the IBM folks involved. Mm-hmm. So they're building an app for the farmers, right? And to help speed up the loan approval process between the bankers and the farmers who grow the bananas, right? So,
yep.
The loans over there is, you're talking about $30, loan amount between 4 to 8 days and to pay back to get the application approved by the banker. So based on this mobile blockchain, they use it to study the behavior of, interaction of the farmers, their orders, and speed up the process. Actually made amazing results, and 6% profit, 30% more loan amount for the bankers. So that's a good application for the places like Kenya, getting the money where they need it to finance what they do, selling vegetables and in the farmer's market, right?
Yep.
So I think these are little examples, but with huge impact. And
huge
it's
impact.
Not directly a hunger, but it's related. I thought I'd just share the story. Twiga, if you want to Google, T-W-I-G-A.
Yeah, I appreciate the story. I mean, I put solve world hunger mainly because people say, oh, I'm just going to put blockchain in and it's going to solve this problem, right? And it's not that easy. There's work to be done right on top of it. But it's about driving that efficiency. I've seen the same thing in Cambodia with microloans over there, right? So it's it definitely has a huge impact and huge capability. I mean, if you think about it, 60% of the world's population doesn't have an identity, right? If I try and immigrate to another country, I have no identity, no way to prove who I am. With a decentralized trust system, and they don't have this identity because they don't trust their government, that the country that they're in, right? If I have a decentralized trust system, then yeah, I might be able to have some sort of identity where I know I won't be abused and I won't be misused by having that that representative identity. So there's a lot of different things that blockchain has hope for and promise.